Welcome to Season 2 of SharePint, as we continue to tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host.
Today I'm talking with Christian Lakey and Aaron Carla from Silver Branch Brewing Company. Thank you both for being on the show.
Of course.
Thanks for being here.
Let's start with your location. Many breweries are in industrial park or similar space, but Silver Branch is in an office building. So share with our audience what went into that decision and then the challenges that presented.
So we imagined that we were also going to end up in an industrial park somewhere. It just seemed like that's what happens because you need to have relatively low rent and you want to have a spot where you can get trucks in and out. So a lot of things pull you in that direction. But as we started to look, we were presented with this location and immediately fell in love because our goal was always to share beer with our community. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as we realized there was the possibility of being able to open Silver Branch in a spot where we didn't have to make people travel to us, but we were essentially coming to them, mm-hmm. we immediately fell in love with the idea and just worked with our landlord to make it work for us.
I mean, kind of echoing what Christian just said, especially with regards to community, like, I live in the community. I live maybe three blocks from here. Uh-huh. And so most of the breweries that I travel to or, you know, on weekends or when I have some time off, you know, it is someplace that, you know, I've got to take an Uber to, you know, a part of town that looks like it's all, you know, warehouses from a 90s episode of Homicide. And then I show up to a brewery that's mm-hmm. really lovely, you know. Mm-hmm. So I really like being steps off the metro, mm-hmm. Minutes away from where tons of people live.
Right.
And again, it's like it we get to be a center of the community mm-hmm. as opposed to having to bring people to us.
Right. Well, what types of challenges did you have with it being in an office building? I mean, structurally, I think a lot of times people are in industrial parks because of, you know, got a lot of heavy equipment and, you know, things like that. I mean, what did you guys have to overcome?
A lot, really. I mean, it's crazy now, 2 years on, to remember back to the days that we were building this place out. But we took two different suites and combined it into one combined area, which mm-hmm. is Silver Branch. Mm-hmm. One section where the brewery is located was 3 feet lower than the rest of it, just because we're on a hill.
Okay.
And so that's just the way that the building was constructed. That 3 feet was taken up by structural steel. So we got 18, 20 foot deep I-beams delivered, and they had to weld them between all the columns of the existing space and then pour a new floor on top of that. So there was a lot of work that went into making this place strong enough to support a ton of liquid in tanks.
I'll crush your neighbors below.
So. Yeah, exactly. That's
always right tank coming through, sorry.
That's my worst nightmare is like we've got a bank and a Dunkin' Donuts and other things beneath us. And the idea that, you know, somebody's gonna come flying down on top of them is a terrifying prospect. But so far, so good. We had good structural engineers working on it. So here we are.
That's awesome. I came on probably 2 months before, 2 or 3 months before we actually opened the brewery.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the first time I walked into the space was actually the day that I interviewed with them. And I was like, this is gonna be a brewery, and like soon, you know? It was basically a construction zone.
Okay.
And I remember the first day that I walked into work and was like, this looks like a place that people are actually going to come.
Yeah.
You know, like this looks like a place where it's gonna be a community gathering spot. It's going to be a really nice part of the neighborhood and mm-hmm. hopefully something that brings people to Silver Spring.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and it's just fun because it's a 10-story tall building. And you wouldn't think that there's a brewery here, but people just love the fact that, you know, here in the middle of Silver Spring is a brewery where not only do we make beer, but we package beer. We've got vans going out multiple times a week for deliveries. And mm-hmm. so it's a production brewery tucked in the middle of a building in downtown Silver Spring. I think people really enjoy that. When I was in Bamberg a few years ago, they have 7 breweries within the city limits, and I always thought that is a really neat model to follow, where you've got people, you know, living and working and enjoying going out all in the same, you know, same city block, and so mm-hmm. that's what we went for here, and that's here. That's what we made.
Well, that's great. I mean, it segues nicely into the fact that your atmosphere here, it pays homage to the 4 major brewing cultures, you know, Germany, as you just mentioned, Belgium, kind of the British Isles, put UK and Ireland together, and then the United States. So talk about how these influences highlight the style choices that you make when you brew here.
So I would say if we had one overarching goal with most of our beers, it would be balance.
Mm-hmm.
Brett and I both, my co-founder Brett and I both have always enjoyed the balanced classic beer styles of the world. Mm-hmm. So I've got here what's essentially an English summer ale slash bitter that we're releasing today. Pilsner is one of our flagships. We have a stout as well, and then an American IPA, which is not a hazy IPA, but rather sort of more of a classic take on an American IPA. And so in all of those cases, there are balanced beers that you can drink, you know, two, three of, without feeling like your palate is being so saturated that you don't really want to take another sip. Mm. And so mm-hmm. I would say that that's really the foundation of what we were aiming for with the with Silver Branch. Mm-hmm. And not surprisingly, the beers that you think of when you think of the four major beer cultures, the beers that immediately come to mind are, you know, sort of the Pilsners and the balanced beers. And then they all have more extreme examples as part of the culture. So, in, you know, if you think about Central Europe, you've got your double box. If you think about the Americas, you've got your hazies and your double or triple IPAs. Mm-hmm. Belgium, you've got your quads and so on and so forth. So we knew that we always wanted to have that be part of what we do because it's a part of those cultures. But the mainstays of our beers are really the balanced beers that you just sit down and enjoy with friends and, you know, don't necessarily have to ruminate over, but they're enjoyable enough that if you do want to ruminate over them, that they're worthy of that as well.
Right. Well, you also, your name kind of takes something from a little bit of those cultures and things too. Tell us a little bit about, there's a little bit more behind the name than just maybe people realize.
Yeah, so we had a different name originally, which we lost due to a trademark challenge, which was kind of a crushing blow, but in the end it ended up being a bit of a blessing because I think we're much happier with Silver Branch now than we would have been with our original name. Mm-hmm. So when Brett and I started brainstorming what that new name is going to be, it was a painstaking process. And in the end, we ended up going with Silver Branch, like you said, because silver comes from Silver Spring, mm-hmm. but the branch is a reference to an old European tradition, which is true in both Central Europe and in the British Isles. So I don't know if it's a Celtic tradition or what, but they used to hang a branch out when they had beer for sale. Mm-hmm. And so back in the days when alewives would be making the beer, they didn't maybe always have beer. And so when they did, they'd hang a branch out. Mm-hmm. And this continues to this day in southern Germany. They have what they call Basenwirtschaften, where they hang out brooms. And that indicates that they have the new wine. And so there's actually a period of time in Germany where they are legally allowed as households to sell this new wine, and they make food in their households. And so they have this this continued to this day. So the broom, the branch in our mind is a symbol of hospitality, of come share a beer with us at Silver Branch. And then we also like the fact that there's a lot of roads around here, you know, Piney Branch, Broad Branch, and a Muddy Branch. There's just a lot of roads, something branch.
Yeah.
And they, I guess they refer to streams. So it just seems to be something I haven't seen anywhere else in the country. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a local connection as well.
Yeah, and I mean, Christian's kind of talking about, like, on one of my favorite things about Silver Branch is kind of this beer education piece. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always drank beer. I've always really enjoyed beer. You know, but stuff like learning that, you know, they put the branch out when beer is for sale, or even just, again, the styles that we brew that you just touched on. Like right now I'm drinking Mondo Mundo, which is our Mexican style Vienna lager.
Okay.
And, you know, I've had like commercial examples of this many times, but I did not know kind of how Vienna lager came to, you know, the Americas and came to North America and came to Mexico. And so it's really cool for me to kind of like learn about these different styles, where they came from, and work for a brewery that has more of a like global focus as opposed to here's 14 different here's 14 different IPAs, and I'm sure that they're all delicious, but you know, again, it's that education piece.
Right. Well, also a little bit more of the German influence. You guys have a really nice outdoor beer garden at Upsal Town, and then also that you were constantly trying to create this sense of Gemütlichkeit. So tell us about that.
Well, I would say that the Gemütlichkeit is really a, it's similar to the putting the branch out. It's essentially, as I referred to earlier, we wanted to share beer with our community. That was really the underlying concept behind opening Silver Branch. And so this idea of explore your world, experience Gemütlichkeit, that's what we wanted people to think of when they thought of Silver Branch. So for beer cultures, balanced drinkable beers, come out with a friend and have a couple beers. And so just to take a step back, Gemütlichkeit is a German term for a sense of coziness and camaraderie and belonging that you get when you're in a spot that you feel like it's just where you're supposed to be. It's this place to hang out with a friend and just get this sense of warmth and welcoming. And so that's really what we wanted. We wanted people to come out here and just share a beer with us and have a good time. Mm-hmm. So sometimes craft beer can be perceived a lot of different ways, but we really wanted it to be this sense of just enjoyment.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that we're talking about Gemütlichkeit because I feel like that's like been this spelling word, you know, that I put in all of our social media posts and have to use all the time. And actually, again, when I was interviewing for the job here, my brother is from Germany. Okay. My brother-in-law is from Germany. And I was like, how do I pronounce this? Because I don't want to butcher it. And, you know, knowing me, I'm sure I got nervous and absolutely butchered it, you know. Thank you, C-minus public school German in high school. But again, it's a spirit that I think permeates everything that we do here. Again, from like our taproom service and, you know, having people discuss beer with you, talking about the beer, trying to foster, that sense of coziness, but as well as like the styles of beer we brew. Mm-hmm. You know, all the beers that are on this table right now are beers that are, you know, best enjoyed in multiples with friends in a very like convivial environment.
You're right. Absolutely. Well, Christian, you did an apprenticeship in Belgium earlier in your brewing career. So share with us those experiences and then how they helped shape you as a brewer.
Well, that was an amazing experience. I was fortunate enough that I worked at an organization where working there for 5 years, we got a 10-week sabbatical, which was essentially a vacation. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I met there and had a baby boy. And so we took our sabbatical, and she was kind enough to let me take the family to Belgium so I could work with some local breweries to really explore the question of whether I wanted to follow my dream of going pro or not. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to many breweries in Belgium and heard back from one, Jean-Louis Diet, who is the owner of Brasserie à Vapeur. And he invited me to come and hang out and help him in his brewery. And when I was there, he then set up day-long apprenticeships or, you know, just visitations at a bunch of other local breweries. So I got to go to places like Saison DuPont, Blogy, Silly, and a couple other breweries just to get a sense of how bigger breweries operated as well, because his was quite small. And I just fell in love. And when I realized that brewing commercially was really not any different from brewing at home, except we have better tools and you make more at once. But conceptually, it was not different. I was really sold on the idea. So for me, that was a big turning point. It took many years after that before I was able to financially and for multiple other reasons make the transition.
Sure.
But yeah, that for me was a great experience.
That's crazy. That's amazing. Now, you mentioned Bamberg earlier in Germany, the you know, most breweries per capita, and has a rich history there. Did you actually get to spend some time there as well? I mean, because clearly that would be influencing, you know, your beer.
I didn't. I've lived in Germany, and that has influenced my perception of beer a lot. But I had a friend who got married in Switzerland, and so I went to his wedding and just made a pilgrimage to Bamberg for the Rauch beer, and to visit Weiermann maltings, because I was working for Gordon Biersch at the time and we used all Weiermann malts. So I got a tour of the Weiermann facility and just got to experience the beer culture in Bamberg, and it was great.
That's great. Well, it sounds like those two experiences in particular, you know, really not just shaped you as a brewer, but maybe shaped what the Silver Branch has done in the direction that you've gone. So those are the things that are why you kind of use some traditional brewing techniques that maybe other places don't.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the beer culture and the process of making beer has always been as appealing as, you know, drinking beer. I love seeing how the local water chemistry, cultural underpinnings and festivals and everything really create a beer as much as, you know, as much as taste. I mean, it's interesting how these things come together over the years. So you've got traditional beers in a certain spot because of underpinning concepts of taxation, water chemistry, you know, invasions from another place, and things like that. So the history of why local beers are what they are, for me, is fascinating. And then from the time I started homebrewing in college, the process of taking these ingredients and putting them together and then having yeast turn them into beer,
that almost alchemic process is just so fascinating that as I said, that's for me as appealing as the actual process of drinking it. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I've had a chance to live abroad and see beer consumed in Britain, Belgium, Germany, Africa, and other places, wow. and just the kinds of things that are available in different places and why, for mm-hmm. it just led to this idea that we should have a place that celebrates beer as it's presented in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So even coming down to our glassware and the look and the feel that we tried to accomplish in our tap room, that's all influenced by the way that beer is enjoyed in different mm-hmm. countries.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually something that extends to the events that we do here as well. Mm-hmm. We are actually getting ready to throw a huge Kolsch party here, where in which like Kolsch is presented in the States the same way that it is presented in Germany. Mm-hmm. Walking around with the trays and basically telling the servers, when you're done, as opposed to having to flag somebody down and order a beer.
Okay.
And with the education piece, with different beer styles, how beers are made, I feel like my knowledge about beer has come a long way. But being able to spread that to the community and show how things are presented differently in different parts of the world is really very cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, let's tap in a little bit more because it's a great opportunity for our audience to learn more because you have so much experience, Christian. Can you talk about some of these traditional brewing techniques, things like decoction or why you would use a multi-step mash or the process of reverse osmosis with water, like why those things are important that you do them here and maybe other breweries don't?
Well, that's a great question because it comes back to what I was just saying, that the local chemistry and traditions do inform why different beers are popular in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting with the last thing you said, the reverse osmosis, Pilsner was invented in Czech Republic, in Pilsen,
mm-hmm.
Hence the name Pilsner.
Right, right.
It was a kind of a cross-section of a brewer who came from Germany/Austria with some techniques, but then used those techniques to make a beer in Pilsen, where they have incredibly soft water. And they have local malts and hop cultivation that had gone on for a very long time. So mm-hmm. they had very, very high quality ingredients. And it was right around the time that technology had increased to the point where it was possible to make really inexpensive, very pale malt mm-hmm. and glass containers to serve that beer in. So all of these things together made it possible to make a light-colored beer and to see that and appreciate that light-colored beer in a glass. And so everything came together at once to make what we now know of as being Pilsner.
Okay.
So you have a brewer who came with the techniques and the ingredients to make this brand new beer in the 1880s that took over the world.
Mm.
And so in order to emulate that beer with our Czech Pilsner, Czech style Pilsner, which we call Glass Castle,
mm-hmm.
we needed to install a reverse osmosis machine so that we could make very, very soft water that would emulate that incredible hop flavor, but without the, there's a different character of bitterness you get from soft water versus harder water. And the more mm-hmm. the harder the water, the more bracing the bitterness is. So Pilsner, Czech style Pilsner, is a very bitter beer, mm-hmm. but it is a very soft bitterness. And so in order to get that character, we needed to install a reverse osmosis machine, which we use for all of our water. But then for our beers like bitters, we'll add a lot more salts into the water in order to emulate the water chemistry that you would find in Britain, for example.
Gotcha.
For our Czech style Pilsner, we do use all imported Czech malt. And that's more or less what we've done for all of our beers. For the British beers, we use Maris Otter malt from Britain.
Mm-hmm.
More and more, we're trying to reduce our carbon footprint, so we're exploring using English and continental-style malts made closer to home. There's a local maltster called Proximity Maltings out in Delaware, and they do a very good job. They've brought in European seed stock, and they work with the farmers to keep the fertilization levels down, so the nitrogen levels the protein levels are lower in the
mm-hmm.
grain.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to find the right malts for our beers, and if we have to import them, that's okay. We want to remain that true to the style, but where we can find them locally, we like to do that as well, just for environmental reasons.
Right. Well, that's great to hear. For me to learn more about the process that you do. I've come from Czech heritage. My grandfather was from the Czech Republic, and so you know, that's something that I can now appreciate. Like, I knew when I had Glass Castle that it was different than other pilsners that I'd had, but now to understand why and the process that goes behind it, it's really neat. It makes me appreciate it even more, and the fact that you put that much care into, you know, trying to really replicate a style true to what it was meant to be.
Yeah, and we also use yeasts that we think are appropriate to the different styles. So for our English style beers, we've decided on Fuller's yeast as being our primary yeast.
Okay.
And one that I'm actually really passionate about is Kolsch. That's one where the right yeast is really a defining characteristic of that beer. You know, it needs to be very light bodied, very drinkable and crushable in any case, but it needs to have a very distinct yeast character that you really get only from that, you know, that Kolsch yeast. And so we use a Kolsch yeast for that beer, and we as we do for all of our beers.
I don't know if you saw my eyes light up. That is my favorite beer that we produce every single year.
Okay.
And I'm extremely excited for it to return.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I mean, we've talked about it, but you brew a large variety of styles here at Silver Branch. But let's kind of keep with the clean, classic styles and talk about last year's Great American Beer Fest, which was held virtually. But you're Beyond the Gnome World, won a gold medal in the classic Saison category against 79 other entrants. It's very exciting. So tell us about that experience and then what it's done for Silver Branch's brand.
Well, I'll just jump in with an anecdote. I found out about that gold medal the Friday before we got married. We got married here, actually, on a Sunday.
Cool.
Brett Robeson, actually, who is, you know, the co-founder, he performed the ceremony.
Oh.
So it was very, very cool. But we were out at dinner, and my phone just started blowing up. And I was like, oh, no. What happened?
Probably the brewery.
Yes, exactly. And I looked down, and it was, you know, we had won a medal at the Great American Beer Festival, and it was a bunch of people tagging us on social media saying, like, congratulations, Silver Branch. So then it was like, wow, what did we win in which medal, what category? Because I remember, you know, we even sent things in. I think we even had to overnight them. You know, because it was like, what do we want to send? And so, like, we were just standing up here at the, it was like me, you, and maybe James, standing up here at the bar being like, okay, here's a box. Let's put them in and let's ship them off, you know? And, like, I think that none of us ever really thought again.
Well, I mean, there's so many good beers. You just, I mean, you obviously hope, but the chances of winning are just so, so small. There's just so many good beers out there. Similarly, I had, I found out in the same way that you did, that I had just finished a long day of double brewing and was finally wrapped up. I was driving home and my phone started lighting up. I had completely forgotten that the results were coming out. So it's like, oh, what's going on here? And then, oh my gosh, we got the amazing news. It was fantastic. And coming back to my apprenticeship in Belgium, I, you know, to some extent attribute it to that, because the part of Belgium where I was working is the part of Belgium where the saisons are really, a lot of those are made. So I went to, I got to spend a day at Blogis, at DuPont, which is actually my opinion of a gold standard saison. And that's really the inspiration behind the recipe for Beyond the Gnome World is all Pilsner malt, Sots hops, and get out of the way of the yeast. Let the yeast, you know, carry the load, because that's really the defining flavor profile of the beer. So, go for the little fruit, little pepper. You know, let that, you know, that nice, slightly grainy Pilsner malt shine through. But really, it's meant to be just balanced, easy drinking, pleasurable beer. And I like the fact that it's just slightly sub 5% alcohol, so you can have two or three of them and still be good to drive home. And right now it's at the Nats ballpark.
That's awesome.
So we got a picture from a friend yesterday of him drinking a Beyond the Gnome World at the Nats park. So that feels really good.
That's obviously a great way, as you're like, well, how did this impact the brand? Because, I mean, you guys are just barely over 2 years old, and to have that kind of accomplishment acknowledged is awesome. But like you said, it pays off of all the study that you did over in Belgium, and then to have it on a big national stage like that for baseball, that's fantastic.
Also, it's just a great beer to drink while watching baseball. It's, you know, it's refreshing. Again, like Christian just said, relatively low gravity, so it'll last you through nine innings without, you know, without you forgetting that you're at the game.
It finishes incredibly dry. So I find when it's really hot outside that, really generally speaking, I don't want that sticky, your mouthfeel you have after a bigger beer.
Yeah.
But the fact that it finishes as dry as it does, it's almost champagne-like in that, you know, you want another sip afterwards. So when it's full summer, I think it's going to be very popular down there.
That's awesome.
And one thing that's worked out fantastic for us is that we had a flagship for all of the other three brewing styles at that point in time. Mm-hmm. We had opened thinking that Witbier was going to be our flagship style for the Belgian family.
Uh-huh.
But you know, we're up against some stiff competition in the form of Optimal Wit in this in this area. It's an amazing beer. And you know, it's taken a lot of the place. And then, of course, Allagash White is
national
the other thing.
Players.
So
exactly.
Between Blue Moon, Allagash White, and Optimal Wit, the market was pretty well saturated.
Sure.
So
sure.
We found that that brand didn't take off for us as well as we had hoped it would. And then when we won the medal, we thought to ourselves, well, this might be the opening we need to make a Saison, which is a style that not many people know well enough to immediately reach for it. But we thought this might be an opportunity to get people to know it well enough that it becomes a local favorite. So we're hoping that'll happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what's kind of fun about our Saisons is, you know, we've become kind of like regionally known for using gnomes on our label, mm-hmm. which is definitely a nod and a tribute to Achouf in Belgium, who, of course, you know, famously uses gnomes on their label as well.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to ask you, you know, particularly as a marketing person here, is that, you know, the gnomes have become quite popular.
Yes.
So maybe talk a little bit about the gnomes and what they've done for you.
Our gnomes are awesome. We have a really brilliant artist who does
Absolutely.
Our labels, Chris Bunnell. He does everything, but he kind of created these gnomes. And I think actually the first label we used them on was Metronome, which is one of my favorite labels, just
cool.
because like it really ties in DC.
Yep.
It is gnomes on the metro, but it's also like gnomes on the metro looking like bored people on the metro, like they're reading, they're looking at their phone, they're looking out the window, you know, and so it's like, it's a very cute label. Actually, we do have posters for sale here in the brewery.
Cool. That's cool.
Little plug. Like,
yeah,
absolutely.
You know, I gotta get it in there.
For sure, absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, it's since, like, the gnomes have gone on tons of adventures, you know, Beyond the Gnome World, of course, the GABF gold medal winning beer, you know, they are being explorers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did Gnome for the Holidays, which was, of course, a holiday-themed label.
Nomenclature,
which kind of was a Albert Einstein inspired gnome.
Nomageddon. With Oliver Brewery.
Yes.
All My Gnomies.
All My Gnomies.
That's cool.
Is a very delicious beer. And again, it, you know, it's kind of an interesting style because that one's a West Coast Saison. So it's a uses West Coast hops and Saison yeast, am I correct?
Yep,
yes.
That's right.
And so I really love it. But, you
we're
know.
We're a little worried we're going to run out of gnome puns at some point. We don't know what we're going to do.
We'll need to bring in Melinda. Yes. There will never be enough gnome puns.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that's really exciting to hear, you know, about that recognition for you guys. You know, that in that same GABF, another one of our past guests, Zach Russmiller, who's at 1623 Brewing up in Eldersburg, a little closer to where I am, you know, they won in the American fruit beer category, which is a little unusual for them because he's a clean classic styles guy like you are.
Right.
I mean, he's got a number of GABF gold and silver medals, World Cup medals, things at competitions for Hefeweizens and Pilsners.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when we interviewed him in the past, he really kind of got me excited about going back and appreciating the clean classic styles. And with, you know, that really being something you guys do really well, kind of selfishly of hoping at some point there's going to be a 1623 Silver Branch clean classic styles collab.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I was like, let's put these two medal winning brewers together and come with some really outstanding classic beer. So
that sounds like a good idea. We should look into that.
That would be cool. That would be awesome. Well, we've all been forced to adapt based on COVID. You know, we had to shoot remotely for the second half of our season. Talk about the various pivots that you guys had to go through, and then how you managed to have a really great celebration for your second anniversary this past March.
Yeah, it's been a crazy year, not more than a year. We had our first year anniversary party, fantastic party celebration, and then I think it was 2 weeks later that we
had... I think it was a week later.
Something shockingly soon after that we had to shut down. Due to COVID. And so as our accountant said recently, so you had 1 year to try to stand up the business and you had 1 year to try to survive COVID. I wonder what's going to be your third year is going to be like. So we're hoping that it'll be less eventful than either one of those 2 years.
Right.
Or if it's eventful, it's eventful.
At least
in
a good way.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we were lucky enough to have a canning line from the time we opened. So it was a, you know, starting level canning line, but we had a canning line. When COVID hit, that was huge because mm-hmm. all of a sudden draft beer sales plummeted. Right. Nobody could go out.
Right.
And so at the same time, canned beer demand rose in a similar fashion. Mm-hmm. So we had the ability to stop kegging beer and put all of our beer into cans. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of labor, but the PPP loan kind of took care of that. Okay. So we got a PPP loan. We threw people at the canning line. We canned all of our beer. And then we also got an EIDL loan, an emergency disaster loan from the government,
okay,
which is a 30-year low interest loan. And we used that to buy a better canning line and to increase our capacity. Mm-hmm. So we kind of took the approach where we ran at the problem as opposed to running away from the problem, just figuring mm-hmm. that we would try to do more. Mm-hmm. With the government assistance, we were able to do that. And that's really been our approach. So now we actually ended up brewing more beer at the end of the COVID year than we mm-hmm. did at the beginning,
okay,
which was a really exciting place to be. The biggest challenge, I would say, is the inability to sell beer over the bar and at retail prices.
Right.
I mean, that's the part that I would say was the biggest challenge.
Right, there.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
So luckily, in the middle of the COVID summer, the outdoors was open again. So uh-huh. even though we couldn't serve beer inside, mm-hmm. we did have a large beer garden, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So that was huge. And then the winter time was really just a matter of selling as much as possible in cans, both in home delivery mm-hmm. and via retail stores.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another area I didn't mention, which is the other way that we ran at the problem was by beginning to do home delivery. We opened a home delivery aspect to the business and of course pickup, which had been which we had done before that, but mm-hmm. we added wine, we added cocktails, and we added home delivery. So now even though we have the tap room open again, I mean the tap room and the beer garden open again, we're still doing home delivery. Mm-hmm. So that's just sort of a new aspect of the business.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty much just try to give people opportunities to purchase Silver Branch beer any way that they possibly can. And expand what's available to them in any way that we can. So we did food delivery and food to go as well. Mm-hmm. Pretty much any way we could sell something to somebody,
yeah.
we did.
Yeah.
Flour, yeah. Yeast, toilet paper.
That was a Christian initiative, yeah. I mean, tying on to everything you just said, one of my favorite things about Silver Branch is we're going to take this and run with it, mm-hmm. and don't be wrong, make smart decisions, but be bold.
Right.
I think it was in April maybe or May of last year, it was shortly after the beginning of the pandemic, Brett looks at me and is like, we're gonna make a website, like we are going to make an online ordering system. And we work with a wonderful guy over at Digital Inc. named Jason Unger, who helps us with our website. Mm-hmm. So basically it was a ton of web development, mm-hmm. basically with the goal of make people able to order from their homes, make mm-hmm. people able to get delivery or pick up or whatever they want. And it was this huge project that I think has really worked out super well for us. Mm-hmm. We are able to sell whatever we are legally able to sell
mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. get it to people. I mean, because like really the end goal is always get the beer in people's hands, you know? But again, pushing it with things like food to go, pushing it with things like cocktails to go, you know, it's a winning combination, and you just have to, try it and see what combination of things you can make work for you.
Right.
And one thing that I am eternally grateful for is the fact that the community really, really supported us.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sure that they enjoyed the beer that they ordered, but I'm convinced that a fair number of people who ordered because they wanted us mm-hmm.
to survive.
Make it.
Absolutely.
And so it's hard to overstate how much that has affected us. I'm so thankful for it.
Well, I think that just is proof that you were able to create the environment that you wanted, that sense of community, that sense of connection, that the people felt that and wanted to make sure that you survived. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we also introduced a membership club last year called the Explorers Club, which basically is kind of, pay a yearly fee and you get, a couple six packs per month. You get discounts on all of your taproom purchases as well as now online purchases. And again, it's called the Explorers Club.
Mm-hmm.
It's open now currently on our website, but it became like this really great way to kind of make the pandemic a lot smoother for us.
Right.
You know,
right.
People in your community who have a vested interest in seeing you survive because they love the brewery, they love the beer, they love having a place to come to, you know? And so it's, I think that was another thing that really, that we did during the pandemic that really worked out very well for us.
Mm-hmm. We are still not allowed to have a big celebration, you know, but we do look forward to that. So that we can bring all the Explorers Club together for a big thank you party to all of them. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, my whole like life is planning big parties and events and like having fun and the fact that like I'm now starting to ramp back up in that department just like fills my heart with joy.
Absolutely. Well, again, it's great that your community stepped up and really that not just that you were able to survive, but actually able to thrive. And again, we talked about Zach earlier, 1623, they had a similar situation. They opened, you know, a week before everything went down, so they were barely open, and then boom, it shut down. And then I just saw recently in the news where they've been able to thrive as well to the point where they're expanding. They're going to have another 8,000 square feet put in for more production and more space to do some different things. And their distribution has really expanded into parts of Virginia and Pennsylvania, Maryland. So just recently finding out that they've been able to really expand and thrive as well, like you guys, and again, Clean Classic Styles. Mm-hmm. We got to get you guys together and do a little collab. Well, again, you talked about the challenges, and I'm a big ancient history mythology fan, particularly Greek mythology. So Sisyphus to me is a great story.
You're my target audience.
I know, and I'm so excited because I think I will share with our audience because it has a really special place in the history of Silver Branch, but even more so with who knew the pandemic was coming, but it seems so much more appropriate now. Talk about that.
I'm glad you picked up on that because the process of getting Silver Branch opened was really much more of a Sisyphean task than I really ever dreamed it would be. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know the story, but for people who don't, Sisyphus was a Greek character in this myth where he was required by the gods to continually roll this boulder up a mountain. Every time he'd get to the top, the boulder would roll back down. So he had this eternal obligation to roll this heavy boulder up a mountain. And it just felt after a certain point that every time we felt like we were making progress on opening Silver Branch, something would happen and the boulder would be back at the bottom of the mountain and we'd have to start rolling it up again and then to be back at the bottom of the mountain. And so when we got to the point where we'd finally overcome all those challenges and gotten the boulder to the top of the mountain, it just felt like we had met success. But I'd like to think that I am not so naive as to think that the boulder was at the top of the mountain was going to stay there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when it came to brewing our very first beer, I thought Sisyphus would be the perfect name because here I am, the boulder's at the top of the mountain. I get to celebrate briefly.
Yes.
But tomorrow I'm going to feel like that boulder's all the way back
pushing
down
rock,
there, and I'm starting
rock,
again.
Pushing a rock.
So,
yeah.
But I do take pride in each small victory of getting that boulder a little further up the mountain.
Absolutely.
But I recognize that it'll keep rolling back to the bottom. So it's been a great metaphor for us. It's been fun.
And then you tied it back in with your second anniversary in COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. We even made a limited edition COVID shirt where we had us rolling the boulder up the mountain, but the boulder was in the shape
coronavirus.
Of a COVID.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was so clever. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, where can people find Silver Branch online? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, things like that.
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
No, we are present on all of those platforms. It's at Silver Branch US on Instagram and Twitter, and it is if you just search Silver Branch Brewing on Facebook. We try to post a lot of fun content that's not just of the like, here's this, buy it. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, actually, Christian helped me with the caption because I was like writing a caption about the Hefeweizen that came out yesterday.
Right.
And, I always take notes in our marketing meetings. We'll talk about like kind of the stories behind a beer and like ways to market it in, in different ways. I was like, I need a beer nerd caption, and I'm sure that I'm going to butcher this. And then again, since I'm the voice that you talk to through social media, I'm going to have to like defend it and sound like I know what, these scientific brewing very precise terms are. So Christian actually, helped me with the caption. I try to include other voices, It needs to be the voice of Silver Branch, which is the voice of all of us and not just me.
Right.
You know?
And actually, brings us back to a comment you made earlier, a question you asked earlier about the step mash. Mm-hmm. And this is a prime example of the importance of a step mash. It's the caption was about how we make our Hefeweizen. And to make the flavor characteristics in Hefeweizen, which are a combination of banana and clove, you need to get a specific chemical compound called 4-vinylguaiacol. And to do that, you need to have a specific temperature rest, 113 degrees for 20 minutes, so that the precursors for 4-vinylguaiacol can be created. Mm. And so you have to start low, and then you bring the temperature of the mash up to your typical protein rest and then saccharification rest. So anyhow, that was the caption of this is about. But it is an example of why we designed a brew house that can do the step mash, the multi-temperature step mash.
Okay. For the record, if left to my own devices, I would have butchered that. Again, everybody thrives on collaboration. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, you guys, near and dear to my heart, you were the first people to follow me when we started our social media.
Yeah.
So it's always a nice connection. So we're going to make sure we get that up on our website at SharePointPodcast.com. Well, we've learned about Silver Branch. Let's get to know you both a little bit better in a new segment that we call Straight from the Tap. It's a series of 7 rapid-fire questions. You can expand on them if you want. Otherwise, we'll just fire away. So, Christian, Aaron, if you're up for it.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Straight from the tap.
One of us first, or like we...
However you want to do it.
Okay. Let's just both screen things.
Yes.
What's your favorite style of beer?
Pilsner.
Whatever I'm drinking.
Okay. What style do you wish more people appreciated, drank, or brewed?
Pilsner. Yeah.
Kosh.
Ooh.
Who are one or two of your biggest influences?
In life or in beer?
However you want to answer it.
Michael Jackson.
Okay.
Patti Smith.
I need to actually make sure that people understand that Michael Jackson I'm referring to is the Michael Jackson beer writer. Not the Michael Jackson musician.
Yeah. I was like, things I did not know about Christian.
Christian, right?
No, my Patti Smith is absolutely the rock star / poet.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Who would you most like to do a collab with that you haven't already worked with?
I mean, I'll go ahead and answer this.
Yeah.
My dream collab is Einstock. They're an Iceland brewery.
Yes.
I go to Iceland maybe 2 or 3 times a year, pre-pandemic.
Right.
I've got a ton of good friends over there, and I would love to share American beer with Iceland and, go brew in Iceland. I told them, if I'm ever able to hook this up, that they cannot leave me behind. Like, I have to go on the trip.
It's on my list of places to go, so let me know. I'll hit you.
I got you. I'll give you all the suggestions.
Awesome.
I'll say Black Sheep Brewing in Britain.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Most memorable place you've ever had a beer?
Phnom Penh.
Okay.
How PG rated does this story have to be?
Well, no. Aaron, we're an audience that drinks beer.
No,
so.
I mean, honestly, I spent a lot of years of my life playing music. I've toured the world. I've had... call back to Iceland. I've had beers where the American and European tectonic plates meet on a hike. Yeah, and it was an Einstock, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Okay, what person, living or dead, would you most like to share a pint with, and what would it be a pint of?
Ooh.
I'm going to say Charlemagne, because one of our beers is Charlemagne's Nightmare, and I've been fascinated by the beer culture of the whole Dusseldorf, Cologne region.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that this beer existed when he was alive, but it would be Kosh.
Cool.
I'm going to take the easy cop out and say, whoever wants to have a beer with me. Like, I mean, honestly.
You've been listening to my podcast. That was my answer when Rob posed the question to me. Wants to share a pint
honestly,
with me?
Honestly, though, one of my favorite things about working here, and of course you could see, like, being here, you know, behind the scenes and early, we all kind of set up in the tap room, and you know, once the tap room opens, it fills up with people, and it's really thrilling to talk to the people who want to come to Silver Branch and talk to the people who enjoy our beer. I've sat at many tables with our guests as well as our founders, investors, etc. And really, it's whoever wants to have a beer with me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, last one. When COVID is over and travel is safe again, where are you most looking forward to drinking a beer?
Okay, so a friend of mine was, I don't know, if he's ever watching this, he should correct me, but the president of the Dutch like Beer Bar Association, so all of the brown cafes over there. So, you know, smoke, drink Genever, you know, drink beer. So anytime I'm over there, he always takes me somewhere fun, so I'm going to say the Netherlands.
Cool.
Gosh, this is a tough one. So many places I want to go. I'm going to say... I've been really keen on the idea of getting back to Central Europe, so I'm going to say Prague.
Okay, so let's shift back to the brewery and then talk about what we can expect from Sober Branch in the next few months, whether it's collabs, releases, events, things like that. What's coming up?
So we are finding that we are in the transition where we've so far been able to just sort of kind of throw beers at the out there. And I think so right now we're in a situation where we've now had 2 years of brewing behind us, and so we've had enough recipes that we've made already that people have enjoyed that we want to make again, but we also want to keep being able to be innovative and creating new beers, and so we're beginning to take some of our beers and put them into series where they can be a little bit more intentional as to when they come out and following one on the other. And so I think what you'll see from us is a bit more of a intentional combination of the beers we were talking about, the balanced drinkable beers with some of the more aggressive hoppy beers and the stronger beers. And so I think people can look forward to a sort of slightly more intentional release structure at Sober Branch.
Okay.
Again, I'm an events girl.
I know. This
yes.
Is
we want to basically do something each and every weekend. And I think that, you know, throughout the rest of April and into May and June, we have every weekend planned out. All sorts of, you know, fun stuff coming up. Again, the Kölsch Festival, which is a favorite of my event. You ask me if I'm great at walking with a tray of Kölsch, the answer is no. But I really enjoy that event, again, for the education piece and for just showing people how it's done in other parts of the world. Looking beyond that, Oktoberfest, you know, because of course the first year of Oktoberfest we were fully open but brand new.
Right.
The second year of Oktoberfest was a COVID Oktoberfest.
Right.
And so this year we really hope to get every single table here outside. We hope to expand all the way down the plaza here. You know, Oktoberfest is maybe my favorite time of year. I have a dirndl for every single day of the week. but again, you know, being able to throw events again, being able to bring a lot of life to the space and a lot of attention to the product that Christian and his team are creating.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like our audience to know that we haven't covered?
I think the thing that I'm most excited about is to continue to putting out these incredible drinkable session beers that, for me are the beers that I enjoy most that we put out there. But more importantly, to combine them again with events and food. You know, after a year of not being able to welcome people into Sober Branch the way that we had always envisioned having people here, the idea of being able to have people meet back and enjoying our food and our beer together is what I'm particularly excited about this coming year.
Awesome. Great. Well, again, remind everyone where they can find Sober Branch online.
You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, as well as silverbranchbrewing.com, where you can, you know, shop in our web store, which of course we've mententioned, which, you know, is something that, a project that I'm particularly proud that we were able to
do. Yeah.
But if you're in the region, just stop in. I would love to have a beer with you.
Awesome. Well, great. I mean, we'll put that up again on our website at sharepintpodcast.com. Well, Christian, Aaron, I want to thank you for your time today for sharing a pint with me.
Cheers.
Prost.
Share a Pint is released bi-weekly on Friday mornings and can be found at sharepintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at share_pint and like, share, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Share a Pint is now a proud member of the Hopped Up Network. Enjoy the show and like to contribute? Consider leaving a PayPal tip. You can do so at the PayPal button on our website at sharepintpodcast.com. Or search for us on PayPal at jerry@sharepintpodcast.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin McLeod, and can be found online at incompetech.com. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at sharepintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@sharapintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Hulla. Prost.